Report, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. Even Saturday and Sunday are casual. Sorry, Jesus. So don't forget your denim hip huggers. Don't forget your bootcut jeans. We're not afraid of dungarees on the Majority Report.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday, April 15th, 2011. And we're just deal with me. I'm going live here, ladies and gentlemen, and I just realized that I cannot do what I thought I could do in terms of monitoring the output there. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday. This is what I do on Casual Friday. I get extremely casual with the technical aspects of the program. And as such, that's what you get. I am in Las Vegas, Nevada. And today we actually, if we can actually deliver the program, it's going to be a great program. Cliff Schechter is here to help me out again. Last night when we went out to dinner, I mean, we'll give you the details, but I told him all you need to do is bring your C game. Bring just 50% of your game. I will bring 50% of my game. It will sound like there's 100% of some left-wing Jewy types. And then later in the program, I have pre-recorded an interview that I did yesterday with Fred Gray. He is a civil rights attorney who was indicted, inducted, I should say. Excuse me. Oh, God. Inducted into the Trial Lawyer Hall of Fame yesterday.
He's mean that as a factual statement, by the way.
Right. inducted into the Trial Lawyers Hall of Fame here at the Mass Torts Convention. And really fascinating life this guy has led. He was Mrs. Rosa Parks' attorney when she decided to basically... not give up her seat on that bus in Alabama. And then, of course, we'll be talking to Chris Rosen, the prestigious senior editor of MovieLine.com, where he will give us a Netflix pick and a on-demand pick. I actually pre-recorded that, too. That's why, I don't know, you could probably sense the change in tone in my voice just when I talk about Chris Rosen now, because there's a certain amount of sentimentality mixed with just absolute pure disgust. And but we'll get to that later in the program. First, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter, you may know him. God, Cliff, I know you from so many different things over the years. Not the least of which your sexcapades that you used to do on the Young Turks, the Republican sexcapades, right? Was that the name of it?
That was the name of it, yes. Am I in?
Yes, you're okay. There.
Yeah, we started that. It almost was pure serendipity. I started doing that in the Young Turks because I remember looking at a couple of the GOP scandals, and they weren't even huge ones. And then within, like, months, it was Foley, and it was Haggard, and, you know, the whole crew started to fall, and it got to be a lot of fun, you know. So, yeah, I did that, and I don't know.
What's your Twitter handle?
It is at Cliff Schechter.
Cliff Schechter. So C L I F F
S C H E C T E R.
All right.
Follow me. There's no second H. We un-Jewified it on the boat over.
No, good thing too.
Right. We didn't want to get beaten in the streets with sticks. But
right.
Yeah. Please come by, follow. Let's have fun. And I have to give the one other plug. I do political PR, as you know, Sam.
Yes. Well,
my firm, Libertas, I have to mention it.
That's right. Libertas. Is that what it is?
Libertas, as in freedom, because I was sick of the damn Republicans always claiming that, and conservatives, that they stand for freedom.
Fighting the good fight. Now, you're also, like, you're doing some anti-gun... See, that's the beauty of being at a trial lawyer convention. You say, what did you say? Just like horrible Republicans? And some guy just walking by didn't even realize that. Well, maybe he did realize we're on the radio, and he just goes, oh, that's a redundancy.
Yeah, I do work with Mayor Bloomberg and Mayor Menino of Boston.
Mumbles.
That's right, Mumbles Menino. I shouldn't say that. I probably just got fired.
Right. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Of Boston and New York, they have a great group, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, and I consult for them because we are trying to, as we call it, fix gun checks, close the background. To actually have universal background checks. I know it seems pretty insane that you...
That's crazy.
I mean, you know, why is it when in Florida a guy from the IRA went and bought thousands of guns, why would you want to go and stop that?
Well, if you're Peter King, you would
actually
promote it.
You'd be the bag man for it.
Right, exactly.
You know, and criminals, I mean, I'll throw another quick case, and those deemed mentally dangerous, mentally unfit and dangerous. There's a guy, John Patrick Bedell, in California, who was, they said that he could not buy guns, and California has closed the gun show loophole, the state has, so he just went to Nevada, got guns, and he's the guy that went to the Pentagon and started shooting.
Fantastic. So. Fantastic. I personally think we should definitely have, I think, frankly, only crazy people should be the only people to carry guns.
I agree with that. I think we should encourage that.
Right.
By the way, that also was not intended to be a factual statement.
No, of course not. No, people get it. People get it on this show. If you're listening to this program, you don't get it. Turn it off now. I don't care how you're listening. If you're listening live, turn it off. We don't have a Sammy Camp today. Maybe during the post show, I'll try and do like a Justin TV broadcast. I wonder if I could do a Ustream broadcast. I don't know. That would be really fun, I'm sure, for all of you to listen to me try and figure that out on air. A couple of stories I want to talk about. Now, Cliff, I know you've been following what's been happening with Bradley Manning. We're basically torturing this guy. President Obama said his being held is appropriate. He's been in jail for almost 2 years now, very close to going on 2 years, without being, he's been charged. I guess about 3 or 4 months ago, they changed the charges because they realized they couldn't get Julian Assange. This is the guy who allegedly leaked to WikiLeaks. They wanted to be able to indict Julian Assange. They ultimately figured out they couldn't because he functioned more or less as the New York Times. And in terms of his role, they were confining Bradley Manning in such a way to try and break him down with hopes, I think, of trying to implicate Julian Assange. They couldn't do that, so at one point they basically decided, okay, we're going to charge Bradley Manning with treason, punishable by death. They strip him down naked at night. They keep him in a small box. They don't let him see sunlight. They don't let him exercise. And, like I said, 250 top legal scholars in the country, including Lawrence Tribe, came out with a letter last week. And then Bradley Manning's attorney essentially goes to the UN, the special rapporteur for torture, a guy named Juan Mendez. And this is the guy who human rights groups go to and they say, hey, Zimbabwe is torturing their prisoners. China is torturing their prisoners. North Korea or Iran or Saudi Arabia. I mean, who knows? And this UN special rapporteur says to the government, let me go and see, inspect these things. That way the world can know that if you're not torturing... You're not torturing. And if you are torturing, it's against UN Convention and many times other agreements. In this case, let's say the United States, it would not only be against the UN Convention on Torture, which the United States has signed off on, it would also be against our own federal statutes, which also say you were not supposed to torture. And so the UN Special Rapporteur...
Nice.
Thank you. For torture, Juan Mendez... contacted by Manning's lawyer and has reported just the other day. Well, let me read some of what his reports. I am deeply disappointed and frustrated by the prevarication of the U.S. government within my regard to my attempts to visit Mr. Manning. I understand that Private Manning does not wish to waive his right to an unmonitored conversation with me. My request for a private, confidential, and unsupervised interview with Manning is not onerous. For my part, a monitored conversation would not comply with the practices that my mandate applies in every country and detention center visited. In other words, let Manning tell him the truth without fear of retribution from his guards. This is just stunning.
Yeah, I gotta say, this is one of the things that offends me most. And there have been things that have gotten me angry about the Obama administration. But really, I mean, you know, in this country, in the United States of America, and maybe the worst part is after the last, you know, decade, it's almost not as shocking as it should be. But I thought that this would change. You know, we all grow up, you go to school and you watch Schoolhouse Rock and you go to your school and you're taught about the great democracy we live in, and people can't just come knock down your door and throw you in prison for no reason. And then you hear about this and I mean, naked and, you know, without being able to have conversation. I mean, at what point, you know, it just, you know, it almost leaves me without words, because again, you know, we're not supposed to be North Korea, and we're not supposed to be China, and we're not supposed to be these places. It's kind of like when they started questioning, well, waterboarding, it's an enhanced interrogation technique.
Right.
You know, a lot like punching somebody in the face, kicking him in the groin, and throwing them in an Iron Maiden. That's enhanced interrogation, too.
Yes.
I mean, just the sort of dumbing down the level of what we now accept. I'm just...
Well, this, you know, this part of... Obama's presidency is the most baffling to me. I spoke to Dahlia Lithwick, I guess it was Tuesday, about not trying KSM Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in a civilian court. These are the aspects, these civil liberties, because they're clearly, what they're doing with Manning is clearly an attempt to basically say to other potential whistleblowers, because they know they're exposed. There's 2.5 million people, I think, who have access to the material that Bradley Manning supposedly had access to. That he allegedly leaked to WikiLeaks. And I think this is their way of saying, like, look, we can't really protect this information. What we're going to do is basically put Manning in the stockades in the middle of the square.
Right.
And say, if you become a whistleblower, if you leak any of our material, this is what you're going to get. And this is a public flogging, essentially, of this guy.
It's like the end of Braveheart.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, not quite with the disemboweling, but...
Right, and you know. Not with the... I mean, I'm not going to do it here, but if we were in my studio, please, by all means, if we were in our studio right now, I would be yelling freedom.
And you'd have
to be yelling freedom.
You'd have that awesome paint on your face. I've seen you give speeches like that, Sam.
Right.
You may not remember last night at dinner when you know, after that last, I think it was gin and tonic.
Right.
You were on the table and, you know.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's what I do usually at every dinner. if I'm allowed to drink gin, that's what will happen. Is invariably I will get up on the table. I will scream freedom, and then, oddly enough, taking a further cue from Mel Gibson, start calling everybody a dirty Jew.
Right.
And that gets really uncomfortable, particularly at Passover.
Yeah.
Particularly passive.
I just sort of start turning to the folks next to me and pretty much blaming them for all the wars in the world.
Right.
I find that's good. And
that's good.
And if there's any... No, I'm not going to even joke about domestic violence. That's
right.
Ridiculous.
Well, I will, but not right now.
Okay.
But, I mean, so it's just another disgusting... I mean, this is the only way they really react to this at this point. Like, I don't even know... And the thing is that there's very... There's just not... And I think Adam Serwer wrote this... in response to when Greenwald was talking about partisans blindly following Obama, is the sad part is there is just does not seem to be, even on the left, and certainly not, and this is probably the most hypocritical thing about like things like libertarians and Tea Party activists, you know, who are so concerned about the Constitution when it comes to, you know, the income taxes shouldn't exist or whatever it is. There just doesn't seem to be a very substantial constituency in this country that cares about civil liberties and cares about these things. And it's really...
Well, I think it's mostly, sadly, that most people figure it'll never happen to them.
Right.
So, you know, and they listen to it's happening to the bad people, and that's okay, and whoever we define as the bad people. But again, when you start down that road, and I look at this all as the, you know, and I know this has been overused sometimes, but when people talk about the frog slowly boiling.
Right.
And well, that's what our culture is right now, because at first, you know, I mean, you watch movie. I was watching some ridiculously cheesy movie the other day. I can't remember what the name of it, with Samuel Jackson and Gina Davis, where she's like a, she was like a CIA agent who hit her head and becomes like a house, like becomes like a mom for like 8 years, and then remembers who she is.
It's like having a conversation with Chris Rose in my movie, Recommender. Yes.
But see, the important part though is that she remembers and she starts fighting the bad guys, and they put her in, you know, they dip her down in water, in freezing cold water, and they were saying, they make a joke at the beginning when the guy's there, it's like, and now the torture begins.
Right.
Now, this is a movie from the late 80s or early 90s, because there was no question, it was torture.
Right.
When the Japanese did it to American prisoners in World War II, it was torture. But then we suddenly get to the point where, oh, well, you know, maybe it's not, now it's just enhanced interrogation, and what will we be calling it next week? And I feel like the problem is, when you start making this a part of your culture, and particularly when it becomes bipartisan,
right?
Well, then how do we ever go back, you know, to when we were a country that respected civil liberties and said, you know, no?
Yeah, if you have a constitutional law professor who is the president, and he's doing this, who's gonna put the brakes on it?
No, that's the worst part of the whole thing.
Right, right. All right. Well, let's move on to something that's actually a little bit more encouraging. I don't know if it's encouraging is a word, but it's certainly gratifying. You're familiar with the Yes Men?
Yes.
There you go.
I'm sorry.
There was a, and apparently they were only involved in this to the extent that they did a little consulting, but U.S. Uncut, basically executed a great hoax where they sent a letter to the AP. Fake press release to the AP, purporting to be from General Electric, saying that GE was going to repay the government the $3.8 billion in taxes that they should have been liable for. And let me read some of this. It's really funny. Because the AP ran with the story. Facing criticism over the amount of taxes it pays, GE announced it would repay the entire $3.2 billion tax refund to the U.S. Treasury on April 18th. GS uses a series of foreign tax havens that the company says are legal, and that led to an enormous refund for the 2010 tax year. There's two parts about this that's really funny. One, it just goes to show, like, how AP will run any press release as long as it's from a big corporation.
Right.
And take everything they say in that at face value. And then the other part is that it's great because it turned out to be fake.
I love this. I read this the other day and I thought, you know, if the pimped out O'Keefe can get away with the garbage he does.
Right.
I think efforts like this from those on the left, I can think of so many instances where if you can put something together like this and send it out, I just think it's the perfect way. It draws attention to this as is necessary. It makes me laugh. It makes Jeffrey Immelt cry.
Right.
Which it always is something that makes me personally happy. I like to bathe in his tears. I'm not sure if I told you that. I'm never being invited over to the White House for dinner.
No. There's a very good chance that, I gotta say that it was probably pretty limited to begin with anyways, the chances. But, here is what the press release said. Jeffrey Immelt has informed the Obama administration that the company will be gifting its entire 2010 tax refund worth $3.2 billion to the U.S. Treasury on April 18th tax day, and will furthermore adopt a new host of policies that secure its position as a leader in corporate social responsibility. We want the public to know that we've heard them, and that we know that many Americans are going through tough times, said GE CEO Jeffrey Immelt. GE will therefore give our 2010 tax refund back to the public and allow the public to decide how to spend it. Immelt acknowledged no wrongdoing. All seven of our foreign tax havens are entirely legal, Immelt noted. But Americans have made it clear that they deplore laws that enable tax avoidance. While we owe it to our shareholders to use every legal loophole to maximize returns, we also owe something to the American people. We didn't write the laws that legally let us avoid paying taxes. Congress did, but we benefit from those laws, and now we'd like to share those benefits. We are proud to be giving something back to America and proud to set an example for all industry to follow. And then the fake press release goes on to quote him, "Given my recent appointment as President Obama's Chairman of the Council on Jobs and Competitiveness, it is no longer appropriate for GE to engage in practices that, whether by fact or perception, are at odds with the greater good of the nation." And so the AP basically They posted it because, you know, it had a GE logo on it, which is fantastic. And I'll tell you something. Back when Who's the Caboose, when we finished it 14 years ago, whatever it was, and it played at the Aspen Comedy Festival, just to promote it because I hired a publicist for something like $1,500 for the month. The guy misspelled Who's 3 different ways in a 2-page document. He couldn't even stick to one misspelling of it.
That's the best.
Yeah, so I realized...
kind of like Gaddafi?
Yeah. I mean, but it was shocking how much I paid. The guy did nothing. So I decided to put out, send fake faxes to all the reporters. I got a list of all the reporters going to the thing. And one was from the Aspen Mountain Company, which turned out to actually be a real name. And I got, like, the, you know, the logo on my PC for a mountain, just like the clip art. And I basically said, we're shutting down the mountain for 2 days during the Aspen Comedy Festival because mountains aren't like people. You can't tread all over them and think that they're going to just continue to spring to life. But in the meantime, while we shut the mountain down, you should check out, you can either go shopping if you're really, really rich, or go see Who's the Caboose. And apparently, the Boulder paper wrote it up and got very upset that they got duped, and I got in trouble.
Well, that doesn't seem fair to me.
No. But
I have to ask at that point why the Boulder paper hates us for our freedoms.
No kidding. But I love this. And so it was the Yes Men co-founder Mike Bonanno confirmed that U.S. Uncut's responsibility for the idea and his group's help. He said that although GE has the right to take legal action, he thinks misrepresenting the company's actions in a comic way is part of free speech and protected by the First Amendment. If you speak as GE, people listen, said Bonanno. If we spoke as ourselves, no one would listen. We come clean with our lies right away. The Yes Men are fantastic.
I think if they could help spur a grassroots movement to get a hold of corporate letterhead everywhere. I mean, I'm not even kidding. Like,
right.
I am kidding, and it'd be hysterical, but at the same time, this gets people to pay attention, and it reminds people of how absolutely ludicrous it is that a company like GE pays no taxes. And so I think for those aspiring Yes Men out there, get out there, you know.
Send me some letterheads. I'll enjoy doing sending some fake press releases.
Me too. I'm in on that also.
A couple of things I just want to touch on. One, the people's budget, I believe, was being presented on the floor of the House. Maybe right now. I'm not sure. Dana Milbank, where's my 360 where I can hit the "You are a douchebag" button? I got to be careful. I can't keep shitting on people, but I'm going to keep shitting.
You have to remember, Dana Milbank, he wrote a book about how crazy the Tea Party guys were, so he had to insult progressives. Otherwise,
right.
He can't stay in the hallowed centrist position.
That's right. That's right. The reasonable middle.
The third way might not invite him over for cocktail weenies, and that's important.
He was poo-pooing the people's budget. This is from the Progressive Caucus. Well, actually, he wasn't even poo-pooing the budget as much as he was the fact that they had a press conference outside in the rain to... what's that mean? Are you hearing music?
I am. There's some nice background music here, folks.
He was poo-pooing the progressives having their press conference about it out in the rain. Just to give you the quick bullet points on it, it eliminates deficits, creates a surplus by 2021. It gives primary budget balance by 2014. That would be eliminating the deficit. Budget surplus by 2021. Reduces public debt as a share of GDP to 64% by 2021, down 16 percentage points. A baseline fully adjusted for both the doc fix, which is a part of Medicare, where they would really actually pay doctors what they're supposed to be paying under Medicare rates, and the AMT patch. This is the alternative minimum tax, which has been creeping up. It's basically gone through bracket creep. Reduces deficits by $5.6 trillion over 2012 to 2021. And they do this by raising $4 trillion in taxes over 10 years, which, as you know, I've mentioned many times, that is basically just putting millionaires at the same effective tax rate they were 60 years ago and 50 years ago.
That's criminal.
That's criminal.
Wait, we love the 50s. No, wait, we hate the 50s. So. 50s were great for social values and, you know, for keeping anybody
right.
Darker than Lindsey Graham out of your school. But
exactly.
But when it came to taxes, they were just insane back then.
Right. We love the 50s. We hate the 50s. She's my mother. She's my sister.
She's my mother and my sister.
Top tax rate would be 49% under this plan. So there would be probably some raising of taxes also on upper middle class. It wouldn't be just millionaires. Fine. $2 trillion cut in defense. Wow. That, like you said yesterday, Cliff, that could leave us vulnerable because we would only have three times the size military of just about anybody else out there. It would include a public option, and it would increase domestic spending. It is doable in many different ways. We have talked about this. And finally, before we move on to the interview section of our program, I just wanted to give you an update, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be talking about this as this time comes closer, but it's getting out there, and I just wanted to mention it. May 21st, 2011, end of the world as we know it. This according to a guy, Harold Camping. He runs the Family Radio Evangelical Station. And the date is quickly coming, May 21st, 2011. So, folks, you
is
may...
Is he Mayan?
Huh?
Is he Mayan?
Isn't it... That's 2012.
I know. I'm just being a jerk.
He apparently predicted the end of the world in September of 1994. Didn't happen.
You can't be too, you know, I mean, we really can't pick on him too much if you're within, let's say, 25 years of the
right.
end of the world.
It was a number. It was a number thing. Right.
The world has been around for 5,000 years. So, I mean, it's not a bad...
Right. Right. 25 year off, that's well within the margin of error.
Exactly.
Well within the margin
of error. It's better than one of Rasmussen's polls.
Right, oh, by far. And he spent the next decade, in the 10 years following 94, calculating when the real date is. And you know, the funny thing is, like, when I was in college, I was a religious studies minor, and I did a paper on Millenistic cults. And that's what happens. The date comes, and you think, like, oh, everybody's gonna, like, snap out of it and go, what the f-? And they
right.
just go like, oh, no.
Right.
It wasn't today. It's actually in, you know, 6 years. Oh, my God.
You know what I think? I think the rule should be that if they're going to make these predictions, they got to put their money or where their mouth or something else is. I think they got to be like those guys that castrated themselves.
Right.
If you really believe it, then step up to the plate.
Well, or I would say to anybody who believes that the end of days is nigh, please, please become a member to the Majority Report now, or even
send,
make a donation.
Send Sam your belongings, because obviously if you're gone...
Yes, anybody who belongs to a Millenistic cult or believes that we're at the end of days who has an Intel-based Mac computer, please think about sending that to us at the Majority Report. You can email me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And we need any Intel-based Mac computers.
Now, I'm not sure when you're kicking me off of this show, Sam. Now, can
well,
I say...
Well, you can come back for the IMs if you want.
I very much want. It's been fun. But I want to thank one person out there.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to thank Don Pechtel, wherever you are, because when Sam told you to follow me on Twitter, you did. And the one Twitter follower I have gained is you, Don. And I would like to say, thumbs up, man.
Is that even a real name, Don Pechtel?
It looks like it. He's the attractive golfer.
Don Pechtel to the...
So, follow Don Pechtel, too, because he's a good man.
All right, so now what we're going to do is we're going to run my interview with Fred Gray, then we will have the interview with Chris Rosen, and then I will take your IMs for the post-show. All right, here's...
Meantime, we're going to go have mimosas.
Exactly.
So it's my pleasure to welcome to the program Fred Gray. He is a veteran civil rights attorney. He is also the president of the Tuskegee Human and Civil Rights
Multicultural Center, located in Tuskegee, Alabama. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Now, first off, let me congratulate you on winning, being placed in the... Trial Lawyers Hall of Fame today at the Mass Tort Conference. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here, and I'm just delighted, and I accepted that award on behalf of my many clients that I've had the privilege of representing over the last 55 years.
Now, let me, I want to talk about a couple. You have some very, very famous clients, some who my audience would recognize their name, some who they would recognize the cases or the events that led up to your representing them. One of whom was Mrs. Rosa Parks. You represented her when you were 24 years old.
Yes, well, I knew Mrs. Parks before I represented her. Matter of fact, she lived in the same community where I went to church, and I met her really during my college years at Alabama State College before I went to law school. And then renewed that acquaintance after I finished law school, and at that time, she was the youth director and the secretary of the Montgomery branch of the NAACP.
And you represented her in her famous Montgomery bus case, which essentially was the catalyst for the Montgomery bus boycott.
Well, that's true. Actually, Mrs. Parks and I had a very good working relationship and a very good friendship over the years because of her work with the NAACP. And as a young lawyer, it was the kind of cases that was the very reason for me being a lawyer in the first place. She worked at a department store a block and a half from where my office was. And for 5 days a week, she would usually come up during her lunch hour. And in those days, prior to the bus boycott, I wasn't too busy, and we would usually have lunch together and talk about everything from civil rights to what was going on in the community and what she was doing at work and what I was doing. And then at some time, she even kept my office for me when I had to run errands when I didn't have a full-time secretary.
And she wasn't actually your first case of that type in terms of the buses, was she?
No, she was not. And matter of fact, 9 months before, a 15-year-old young lady whose name is Claudette Carbon had been arrested under similar circumstances. She attended Booker T. Washington High School and had to use the public transportation system each day to go to school. As a matter of fact, she would transfer downtown, and on the way home on March 2nd, 1955, she sat in a seat on a bus from downtown going home to a similar seat she had sat in before. But the major difference was that particular day there were more white people on the bus than usual. And when all the seats were taken in the rear where blacks were seated, and she was in the first seat next to where the whites were sitting, they asked her to move. And she simply refused to move, said she had paid like everybody else and she shouldn't have to stand, and didn't. So literally they arrested her, and her parents called B.D. Nixon, who was really Mr. Civil Rights in Montgomery at the time. He contacted me, and I ended up representing her in the juvenile court of Montgomery County.
So did her actions, were they a catalyst to what Rosa Parks was doing? I mean, was that in the consciousness of people at the time?
There's no question about the fact that the same people who later came to Mrs. Parks' rescue, E.D. Nixon, Fred Gray, and Joanne Robinson, basically came to Claudette's rescue as a result of her arrest on March 2nd. And there were, we made appeals to the city officials and court officials about conditions on the buses. They promised that conditions would be better. There was some talk then about the possibility of staying off of the buses, but they talked us out of it. But we were determined that whenever the next opportunity arose, if the problem was not solved, then we would be ready for it.
So Rosa Parks had this in mind. This was not necessarily. I mean, I don't know. You tell me. Was it a moment that she had this in her consciousness, that everyone in the community had this in the consciousness, and the opportunity presented itself within that context?
I think that Mrs. Parks certainly was aware of the situation, was aware of the possibility of what could happen, and I think she made up her mind on that particular day when she was asked to get up and move to the back, simply not to do it. And, of course, we all came to her rescue and made the necessary plans. We didn't wait. And, of course, the result of that was we recommended, and Dr. King was selected to be the spokesman for the group on the day of her arrest on December the 1st, 1955, on the day of her trial, December 5th, 55. We stayed off of the buses. We had the bus boycott that night and decided we would stay off of the buses until we could return on a dignified basis.
Tell me, when you're 24 years old at that time, you're an attorney in Alabama. I think you couldn't actually attend law school in Alabama because you were a black man. Give me a sense of just were you threatened at times? Was it something a rallying cry for your community, but simultaneously did it shut down other opportunities for you in this?
Well, actually, what happened is the way our people were being treated on the buses in Montgomery, and I became keenly aware of it when I was attending college, because I lived on one side of town, Alabama State was on the other side. I worked for a newspaper company downtown, and my only means of transportation was the buses. So I had experienced situations and had seen our people who were being mistreated. And while I did not personally have an encounter, I recognize it was a serious problem. And I know Joanne Robinson, who also was a moving force that had a bad experience as far back as 1948. And the community was ready to do something about the bus problem. And they were just waiting on an opportunity to do it and somebody to come forth with a plan. And we were able to do that with Mrs. Parks' arrest.
Now, one of your other equally famous cases is, of course, the plight of the Tuskegee men who were basically used as human guinea pigs.
You're referring to what has become known as the Tuskegee Syphilis Study.
Yes.
This was a study that was financed by the federal government, conceived by some doctors in 1932, in which they decided they were going to study the effect of untreated syphilis in the Negro male. Because when they recruited these men, they were all black, they were all basically farmers. They were told that they were participating in a health care program and felt that whatever was wrong with them, they would be treated for it, and thought that that would help them to be in good health and, of course, be able to take care of their families. When the story was finally broke in 1972, they realized that they were really being taken advantage of. There was a group of persons who had syphilis, another group who did not have syphilis, who was in the study, and some of those men died. Even after penicillin became available, they still didn't make treatment available. One of them contacted me initially. We represented them ultimately. We were able to get their case settled. And subsequent to that, we were able to get President Clinton to make an apology to the men and the whole community for what had taken place. And at that time, Mr. Herman Shaw, who was a participant and who introduced the president at the White House before he made remarks, told him that these men wanted a permanent memorial in Tuskegee to show the contributions they had made. And he announced the formation of the Tuskegee Human and Civil Rights Multicultural Center, which is a nonprofit corporation in Tuskegee, and one of the purposes is to have it as a permanent memorial for the men in the study.
And people can visit, get more information on that at TuskegeeCenter.org. We'll put that up on our website. But tell me, I mean, what
How did you... It's a rather complicated case, but give me a sense of just how it unwound.
Well, it was complicated. And once we got into it and found out that the government was involved, found out that these men had been involved in it over a 40-year period of time, the question arose then, where are the records? Because these men did not have any records.
Right.
But we knew that the federal government had the records because there had been several published reports periodically made on it. And we knew that the doctors came about once or twice a year and that there were records.
So they're basically just using these men as human guinea pigs.
That's correct. Finally, what we found was, and during the discovery process, they simply returned and said, well, we know there are some records. We don't know where they are. But this happened 40 years ago, started, we can't find them. The fortunate thing about it is that the media carried the story, and it included early on the fact that I was representing the men. So I received a phone call from a medical historian in Washington, D.C., named Jim Jones, who called, told me who he was, what he did, and says that I'm familiar with the records, and I believe I have the records that you're looking for. And sure enough, he had discovered these medical records scattered in some 400 and some boxes of the National Archives in Washington. And as a result of that, then the government expressed an interest in wanting to solve the case, and we were able to get it settled.
Was this information that was, I guess, embarked upon to get in the use of these men as human guinea pigs, was it exclusively for government use? I mean, what...
Well, of course, once you get into what they considered medical research...
Right.
And I don't know what they... I think they finally concluded when the study was stopped after it became generally known that they really didn't find out anything from the study that they didn't already know. So, unfortunately, these men had been used over a long period of time. But fortunately, as a result of it, we do have the Multicultural Center. And there was legislation passed by Congress that would prohibit this type of thing happening in the future. I was invited by Senator Kennedy to take several of these men up to Washington on two separate occasions. They testified, and such legislation was passed.
And this was the Pollard v. United States of America.
That's correct. Right. Charlie Pollard was the first person who came into my office on the 27th of September 1972. He was the lead plaintiff in it, and that's Pollard versus U.S. That's correct.
Well, I just wanted to thank you so much for joining me. It's just fascinating. You've had a fascinating career, continue to, and I congratulate you on your placement in the Trial Lawyers Hall of Fame, and I really appreciate you talking.
Thank you very much, and we want to invite your public and your viewers and hearers to come to Tuskegee, because the other two purposes of the Multicultural Center, in addition to serving as a permanent memorial for the men, it also shows the contributions made in the field of human and civil rights by the three ethnic groups that have lived in the area, and that's Native Americans, Americans of European descent, and Americans of African descent. The idea being, you'll see where each group built on contributions made by the other, and whatever problems we still have, they're not nearly as bad as what we had, and hopefully we'll be able to solve them. Then the third purpose of the center is to let the public know that Tuskegee, Macon County, the eastern part of Alabama, where Tuskegee University is located, and Booker T. Washington was the first president, and George Washington Carver did many of his discoveries there. Many of the civil rights cases started there. If there's any one place where the whole area of voter registration occurred is Macon County, because you had African Americans in Macon County filing lawsuits to get the right to vote in the early 40s. Mr. Justice Thurgood Marshall, who was a lawyer then, and also Arthur Shores, who was the dean of black lawyers in Alabama, handled those cases. So it is worthwhile for people to come to see. We'd like for them to come to see and see us on the website, come to the center, and help us to develop the center. It is up and running, and we think it is now one of the best small museums in the country, and it's continuing to grow. And thanks for the invitation to be on your program.
Fred Gray, president and founder of the Tuskegee Human and Civil Rights Multicultural Center, and you can get more information at www.tuskegeecenter.org. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com. Big shot senior editor, eh? Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob. Jimmy Reefer Cakes got to ask you, said, man, how'd you get that job? How did you get that job?
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, how did you get that job? It is time again, as we do every Friday, for me to bring on the senior editor or something, some major title over at MovieLine.com. Of course, I'm speaking about Chris Rosen, former Air America board op, which apparently qualifies you to be a movie critic. I'm not sure how that works.
You know, I'll tell you, Sam, because we spent so much
Chris Rosen, MovieLine.com.
We spent so much time watching the TVs at Air America when we're on the board. You know, you get a little, you can become a critic right there.
Yeah,
plenty of times.
Watch
TNT.
Now. What Chris does is he comes on and he gives me Netflix recommendations or streaming Netflix recommendations or streaming Amazon on demand, because I'm not allowed to go out and, you know, see a movie. Of course, the irony is I'm away from my family right now. I could go see a movie. I could rent one on the TV in my hotel if it wasn't $14.99.
Oh, those are the porn, Sam. You want to stay away from those.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm so...
That's why they're so expensive.
All right. Well, because I figure I'm an adult. Why wouldn't I want to watch an adult movie? But apparently...
Right, no. It doesn't work that way.
All very strange, like cottage industry. Anyway, be that as it may, welcome to the program, Chris.
Thank you, Sam. It's good to be here. I guess you're in Las Vegas this week, huh?
Yes, that's what I just said. In fact, I'm in Las Vegas this week. So, MovieLine.com, huh?
We fact check our stuff doubly, so I just wanted to make sure I had that correct.
Right. Well done. Touche.
You win anything yet?
Have I won anything? Well,
yeah.
I have won the respect of my coworkers, I like to think, and the people here at Ring of Fire who brought me down here. I feel like I've won their respect. Everything else, not so much. But I'm
not
working.
So much.
Yes, I've.
I learned this from a movie, Sam. Wesley Snipes' classic Passenger 57, always bet on black. I think that's roulette he's talking about. So
yeah, I don't do roulette.
I want to think about that. If you did.
Sadly, Evan should know that I have attempted to parlay his monthly salary into something that would be sort of more equivalent to not a. Saipan salary, and sadly, it looks like he may be more like child slave labor. Because
Evan could learn one thing from penny slots, perhaps.
Yeah.
But he's got to be careful how he spreads it out, because it might be his monthly income.
Right, Evan's going to probably not have an income this month, because I've tried to parlay it into something more established. Now you should know, on the plane ride, I watched. I finally got to see Inside Job.
Great movie.
And, you know, I knew a lot of that stuff, but, you know, the part that I hadn't really fully, that I really liked that they went into, that I've never really seen codified anywhere, is how corrupted academic economics has become as a way of establishing, you know, sort of the baseline for what genuine economic thought should be. I love to watch those academics get so embarrassed. You know, these are all people who worked in the Bush administration,
right,
now,
right.
Donna, but that part was really great. And I thought the movie as a whole, I thought it was really, really good. I'm really surprised that you suggested it.
Oh, well, I sometimes, like, you know, Broken Clock is right twice a day, so.
That's right. Okay.
And well, that won the Oscars, so how bad could it be, right?
Well, generally,
oh, that's right.
That's not,
yes.
That's not the
right,
case.
Right, right. Oh, yes.
Now, what did you recommend last week?
Who's the Caboose, I think we did.
That was great.
What a great movie, right?
That was great. I really loved that.
Fantastic. It's out on DVD now.
Right.
And you could buy it or get it from iTunes.
Right.
It's really fun. Funny side note there, Sam. I finally got the DVD in the mail this week. So we're right on time with that.
Unbelievable. Well, there you go. It's a collector's item for you.
It is.
Well,
I have it right in my book.
One suggestion on watching Who's the Caboose.
Yes.
It will be more enjoyable if you do not watch it with your wife if the lead female was a former girlfriend.
Right, I was wondering about that, but I didn't want to bring it up because
you'll
like a sore
enjoy
subject.
It more if your wife doesn't, you know, if it's that's just like a
just a suggestion.
Shouldn't be an issue for too many people, but go ahead. All right, so, and what else did you suggest last weekend?
You know, I think that was all we got to last week, but this week I have a couple of movies for you. You know, since you're losing all your money in Las Vegas, perhaps, or at least Evan's salary, Netflix Instant Watch for free. You know, that's always fun. You know, you pay for the service, but it's free.
Yes, I know that. That's the premise of this whole bit.
Right, right. Toy Story 3 is actually finally available on Netflix Instant Watch.
Are you serious? Are you really going to say that to me?
Yes. First of all, it's a great movie. And second of all, you have a lovely daughter.
I just had like a half a dozen people look at me when they kind of yelled that into the microphone here.
Little did they know you were talking about Toy Story 3.
Are you seriously recommending Toy Story
3? It's a fantastic movie. Have you not seen any of the Toy Stories?
No. You know why? Because I'm not two.
Yeah, but you have a daughter, A.
Well, B, I don't like animation. This is not for my daughter. My daughter is fine.
I'm saying it's a great movie that you can...
wants film recommendations. She could start her own damn TV radio.
No, I'm telling you, it's a great... I'm telling you, it's a great movie. It's very funny, very touching. It's a very good script. The guy who wrote Little Miss Sunshine wrote the script.
You know what's
fabulous
about
movie.
This is that not only am I not going to watch that movie, but I'm going to put up with the literally hundreds of emails. You're going to email me going like, how is it that you have Chris Rosen doing this? This is ridiculous. Toy Story 3?
People love Toy Story 3. I guarantee you all of those emails will say how you're crazy for not watching it. People love that movie. It's one of the most beloved movies to come out in the last few years. And it's finally available on Netflix Instant Watch, which means you can watch it at your leisure. For free.
What's the next one? I don't have too much time for this. I've got to lose money at the crap.
Well, you're going to hate the next one because, you know, you're just not going to like
it. Toy Story 2?
It's actually Toy Story. No.
Jesus.
It's a documentary on Time Warner. It's on demand now. It's called These Amazing Shadows. It premiered at Sundance earlier this year, and it's about the National Film Registry and how they go about deciding what movies to be selected for archiving and to save, basically, because, you know, a lot of old movies are on film and the film is deteriorating, so it's like a classic movie like E.T. eventually, you know, might not even exist if they don't, like, save the film. I mean, obviously it will because it's on digital and stuff, but the original copies, they're trying to save them. And it's a fascinating little movie, and I think, you know, obviously you might not want to spend, like, $4 or $5 on it, but at the same time, it's not out yet, so it could be kind of fun.
That actually sounds like a somewhat interesting movie to me.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. These Amazing Shadows.
I also should just tell you. Oh, here's a little question for you.
Yes.
What John Cassavetes title does that remind you of?
These Amazing Shadows?
Yeah. Just curious.
I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Have you ever taken like any type of film awareness course? Have you?
Of course I have.
What? What was it?
All kinds of great. No, in college. I was very big, a lot of film studies in college, Sam.
Honestly, your lack of awareness of John Cassavetes, probably the country's premier independent film, probably the guy who invented almost the idea of independent film on some level.
Yeah, I know who he is. I know he directed Shadows. That was his first movie.
Where
Google.
Use your Google.
You never said I couldn't use Google.
What's the name of that movie with Gina Rowlands that you talked about last week?
Woman Under the Influence?
Yeah, nice. You called it Woman Under the Verge. It doesn't matter. You thought it was the Pedro Almodóvar movie, whatever.
You wouldn't know who effing Pedro. You wouldn't know Pedro Almodóvar was if he was on the poster behind you.
Of course I would.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, he did Barcelona.
Woman on the Verge.
No, Woman on the Verge, Barcelona. But I mean, I think I saw Barcelona. But look, that's not the point.
That's not the point. We're getting off topic here. Yes.
Yeah, we are getting off topic. That's just impressive to me that somebody could. Whatever, it's not important. I did see Morgan Spurlock's new documentary.
Oh, how is that? I want to see that.
Yeah, well, when you get around to watching it, maybe we.
Well, I don't have the famous connections that you knew. You know, it's John Hamm and
sort of
Michael Ian Black, all the famous people. You know, it's hard for me sometimes.
And I go to the screening of this thing. Like, what is it? Is there some type of like? Is this a money laundering outfit, MovieLine.com? Is it a real, like, entity? I don't understand.
Yeah, no, it's a big thing. I just didn't get to see the screening of that yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't get invited. I don't have the connections like you. You're famous.
You only get invited to screenings of repeat television programs. All right, look, Chris,
Sam.
What?
No, I was going to say, are we saying goodbye here?
Yeah.
Okay, good luck. You know, enjoy Vegas.
Well, you seem, you're not hurt, are you?
No, I think that's good.
Yeah, all right. Okay, buddy. Give me the two films again. Don't even give me the first one. I don't even want to hear the first
one. Toy Story 3. I guarantee you're gonna get tons of mail saying you're crazy. It's called Toy Story 3, Sam.
I don't want that. What's the next
movie? Buzz and Woody. And These Amazing Shadows.
These Amazing Shadows. Okay.
Documentary.
The one I watch.
And Toy Story 3. Don't forget that, Sam. Don't forget to watch Toy Story 3.
Right. Chris Rosen.
Uh-huh.
Senior line movie.
No. Senior editor at MovieLine.com.
Editorline.com.
Uh-huh. Sam, you can
MovieLine.com, right? Okay.
Yes, and Sam, you can tell your listeners to follow me on Twitter at 42inchTV.
Oh gosh, so you can get updates on the latest.
Yes, so you can really see like Parks and Recs, like all the funny lines I found in Parks and Rec.
Yeah, great.
And 30 Rock.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Good luck.
I gotta tell you, I used to really like your Lost recaps, and now. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, Chris, we will talk to you next week. Oh, next week I'll be on vacation, so we may not talk to you, but maybe the week after.
Oh, fun. Where are you going on vacation?
Nowhere.
Oh, all right. Well, have fun then.
Okay, I will.
Bye-bye. I'll see you next week.
Bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Chris Rosen, and... We are back. I'm back live. And let me... I'm going to end the show. And we are going to go... You can... IM me at majority.fm. Of course, where the heck is... I got to get the end music. So I thought, technically speaking, it was not that bad, all things considered. Let's go. Am I getting that? All right. And, can I have me already get some great IMs? I may have, Cliff will be here to join me. And...